The Hyksos had set up a practice field on the alluvial plain abutting the papyrus swamp of the river. When Taita came down from the temple, two battalions of Apepi's guards were exercising at arms under a cloudless sky from which the morning sun blazed down. 200 fully armed men were running relay races through the swamp, toiling waist-deep through the mud, while squadrons of chariots performed complicated evolutions out on the plain, from columns of four forming a single line ahead, then fanning out into line abreast. Dust swirled out behind the racing wheels, the lance tips shot beams of sunlight, and the brightly coloured pennants danced in the wind. Taita stopped by the butts to watch for a while as the line of 50 archers shot at 100 cubits, each man loosing 5 rapid arrows. Then they raced forward to the straw man-shaped targets, retrieved their arrows, and shot again at the next line of targets 200 cubits further on. The flail of the instructor fell heavily on the back of any man who was slow to cross the open ground or who missed the mark when he shot. The bronze studs on the leather thongs left spots of bright blood where they bit through the linen tunics. Taita walked on unchallenged as he passed the matched pairs of lancers who were practicing the standard thrusts and blocks with warlike shouts, broke off their bouts and fell silent. They followed him with a respectful gaze. His was a fearsome reputation. Only after he had passed did they engage each other again. At the far end of the field, on the short green grass beside the swamp, a single chariot was speeding through a course of markers and targets. It was one of the scout chariots, with spoked wheels and bodywork of woven bamboo, very fast and light enough for two men to lift and carry over an obstacle. It was drawn by a pair of magnificent bay mares from the personal string of King Apepi. Their hooves threw up lumps of turf as they spun round the markers at the end of the course and came back at full gallop, with the light chariot bouncing and swerving behind them. Lord Troc was driving, leaning forward with the reins wrapped round his wrists. His beard fluttered in the wind, his moustaches and the coloured ribbons were blown back over his shoulders as he urged the horses on with wild shouts. Taita had to acknowledge his skill. Even at such speed he had the pair under perfect control, running a tight line between the markers, giving the archer on the footplate beside him the best chance at the targets as they sped past. Taita leant on his staff as he watched the chariot come on at full gallop. There was no mistaking the slim, straight figure and royal bearing. Mintaka was dressed in a pleated crimson skirt that left her knees bare. The cross-straps of her sandals were wound high round her shapely calves. She wore a leather guard on her left wrist and a hard leather cuirass moulded to the shape of her small round breasts. The leather would protect her tender nipples from the whip of the bowstring as she loosed her arrows at the targets as they sped by. Mintaka recognised Taita, called a greeting, and waved her bow over her head. Her dark hair was covered by a fine woven net, and it bounced on her shoulders at each jolt of the chariot. She wore no makeup, but the wind and exertion had rouged her cheeks and put a sparkle in her eyes. Taita could not imagine Heseret riding as lance-bearer in a war chariot. But Hyksosian attitudes towards women were different.
"Hathor's smile upon you, Magus,"
she laughed as Troc brought the chariot to a broadsiding halt in front of him. He knew that Mintaka had adopted the gentle goddess as her patron, rather than one of the monstrous Hyksosian deities. "May Horus love you forever, Princess Mintaka." Taita returned her blessing. It was a mark of his affection that he accorded her the royal title when he would not acknowledge her father as king. She jumped down in the dust cloud and ran to embrace him, reaching up to throw her arms round his neck so that the hard edge of her cuirass dug into his ribs. She felt him wince and stepped back.
"I've just shot 5 heads straight," she boasted.
"Your warlike skills are only exceeded by your beauty," he smiled.
"You do not believe me," she challenged. "You think that just because I'm a girl I can't draw a bow.
She did not wait for his disclaimer, but ran back to the chariot and leapt up onto the footplate.
"Drive on, Lord Trock," she commanded. "Another circuit, at your best speed."
Trock shook out the reins and turned the chariot so sharply that the inside wheel stood still. Then, as he lined up, he shouted, "Ha-ha!" and they sped away down the course. Each target was set on top of a short pole at the level of the eye of the archer. They were in the shape of human heads, each carved from a block of wood. There was no mistaking their nationality. Each dummy head was a caricature of an Egyptian warrior, complete with helmet and regimental insignia, and the painted features were as grotesque as ogres. "Little doubt of the artist's opinion of us," Taita thought wryly. Mentaka plucked an arrow from the bin on the dashboard, knocked, and drew. She held her aim, the bright yellow fletchings touching her pursed lips as though in a kiss. Trock brought the chariot in towards the first target, trying to give her a fair shot, but the ground was rough. Even though she flexed from the knees to ride the bumps, she swayed with the motion of the carriage. As the target flashed by, Mintaka loosed, and Taita found that he was holding his breath for her. He need not have worried, for she handled the light bow with perfect aplomb. The arrow slapped into the left eye of the dummy and quivered there, yellow fletching bright in the sunlight. "Buck hair!" he applauded, and she laughed with delight as the chariot raced on. Twice more she shot, one arrow lodged deep in the forehead, the next in the mouth of the target. It was excellent shooting, even for a veteran charioteer, let alone a slip of a girl. Trock spun the chariot around the far marker, and they came back again. The horses' ears were laid back, their manes flying. Mintaka shot again, scoring another hit right on the tip of the dummy's oversized nose. "By Horus," Taita said with surprise. "She shoots like a djinn." The last target came up fast, and Mintaka was balancing gracefully, cheeks flushed and white teeth gleaming as she bit her lip in concentration. She shot, and the arrow flew high and right, missing the head by the breadth of a hand.
"Trock, you clumsy oaf! You drove straight into that hole just as I was loosing!" she yelled at him.
She jumped down from the chariot while it was still moving, and blazed up at Trock.
"You did that on purpose to make a fool of me in the sight of the Magus!"
"Your Highness, I'm mortified by my own incompetence."
The mighty Trock was as awkward as a small boy in the face of her anger. Taita saw that his feelings for her were every bit as ardent as he'd suspected.
"You are not forgiven. I shall not allow you the privilege of driving me again. Not ever."
Taita had not seen her show such spirit before, and this, together with her recent exhibition of marksmanship, sent his good opinion of her to an even higher level. This is a fitting wife for any man, even a pharaoh of the Tamosian dynasty, he decided. But he was careful not to show any sign of levity, lest Mintaka switch her wrath to him. He need not have worried, though, for as soon as she turned her face to him, her smile bloomed again.
4 out of 5 is good enough for a warrior of the Red Road, Your Highness," Taita assured her. "And it was indeed a treacherous hole that you hit."
"You must be thirsty, Taita, I know I am."
She took his hand artlessly, and led him to where her maids had spread a woven woolen rug at the edge of the river, and laid out platters of sweetmeats and jugs of sherbet.
"Oh, there's so much I have to ask you, Taita," she told him as she settled on the sheepskin rug beside him. "I've not seen you since you left Bubasti."
"How is your brother, Kayan?"
he forestalled her question.
"He's his usual self," she laughed, "if not even naughtier than before. My father has ordered that he join us here as soon as he's fully recovered. He wants all his family round him when the truce is signed."
They chatted of trivialities for a while longer, but Mintaka was distracted. He waited for her to broach the subject uppermost in her mind. She surprised him by turning suddenly to Trock, who was standing nearby with a hangdog air.
"You may leave us now, my lord,"
she said to him coolly.
"Will you ride again with me tomorrow morning, princess?"
Trock was close to pleading.
"Tomorrow I shall probably be otherwise occupied.
Then the day after?
Even his moustache seemed to droop pitifully.
"Fetch me my bow and quiver before you go,"
she said, ignoring his question. He brought them to her like a lackey and placed them close to her hand.
"Farewell, my lord."
She turned back to Taita. Trock hovered for a few moments longer and then stumped off to his chariot. As he drove off, Taita murmured, "How long has Trock been in love with you?"
She looked startled, then laughed delightedly.
"Trock in love with me? Oh, why, that's ridiculous. Trock is as ancient as the pyramids at Giza. He must be almost 30 years old. And he has 3 wives, and Hathor only knows how many concubines."
Taita drew one of her arrows from the magnificently decorated quiver and inspected it casually. The fletchings were blue and yellow, and he touched the tiny carved signet on the shaft.
"3 stars of the hunter's belt," he remarked, "with Mintaka the brightest."
"Blue and yellow are my favourite colours,"
she nodded.
"My arrows are all made for me by Gripper. He's the most famous fletcher in Avaris. Each of the arrows he makes is perfectly straight and balanced to fly true. His decorations and signets are works of art. Look at how he's carved and painted my star."
Taita turned the arrow between his fingers and admired it at length before returning it to the quiver.
"What's Trock's arrow signet?" he asked casually.
She made a gesture of annoyance.
"I don't know. For all I care, it's probably a wild hog or an ox. I've had enough of Trock for this day and many days to come."
She poured sherbet into Taita's bowl.
"I know how you like honey."
Ostentatiously she changed the subject, and Taita waited for her to choose the next.
"Now I have certain delicate things to discuss with you,"
she admitted shyly. She picked a wildflower from the grass on which they sat, and began to twist it into the beginning of a garland, still not looking at him. But her cheeks, which had lost the flush of exertion, turned rosy once more.
"Pharaoh Nefertiti is 14 years and 5 months old, almost a year older than you. He was born under the sign of the Ibex, which makes a fine match for your cat."
Taita had anticipated her, and she looked up at him in astonishment.
"How did you know what I was going to ask you?"
Then she clapped her hands.
"Of course you knew. You're the Magus."
"Speaking of Pharaoh, I have come to deliver a message from His Majesty," Taita told her.
Immediately all her attention was fixed on him.
"A message? Does he even know I exist?"
"He's very much aware of that fact," Taita sipped his sherbet. "This needs a little more honey." He poured some into the bowl and stirred.
"Oh, don't tease me, warlock," she snapped at him. "Give me my message at once."
"Pharaoh invites you and your suite to a duck hunt in the swamps tomorrow at dawn, and afterwards to a picnic breakfast on the Isle of the Little Dove,"